Hey, everyone, and welcome to At the Letters for July 10th, 2024. Ben Nicholson Smith here with you, just me today, on this episode of the podcast, which is produced by Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. So thanks to both of them for putting this one together. Arden is on the West Coast this week. I am heading to Arizona tomorrow. So just a tough one to kind of align on schedules. So it's just going to be me for the next little bit here. And I wanted to do something different this week for a couple reasons. One, it's just me, so just a bit of a different setup. And then two, it's also the MLB draft approaching on Sunday, and I want to take a look at that. I've been looking at that for sportsnet.ca in a lot of detail in the last couple of weeks, trying to do a bunch of research into the Blue Jays, how that's looked for them, how that impacts their current major league team, how that impacts their future prospects as an organization. The draft is a big deal, so I wanted to dive into that a little bit more. So the major league team continues kind of doing its thing. I mean, they're winning here and there. They had some big wins in Seattle, lost in San Francisco in painful fashion on Tuesday night. I'm just going to leave that there. I honestly don't think that much has changed. This team continues to kind of play its way out of contention. That's the expectation for me at this point, that they are going to be sellers, that they are going to be trading. They're expiring contracts. They're pending free agents, guys like Yusei Kikuchi and Jimmy Garcia, but you've already heard us say that. So I'm just going to leave that there, and we'll come back to the news at some point when there is a little bit more to dive into. So in the meantime, like I said, I want this episode to be about the draft, and specifically the Blue Jays draft, and trying to answer the question of, have they done a good job drafting? And I can already hear some people sort of answering that question for themselves, maybe with a no. And that's not wrong, but I do think there's a lot more nuance to it. So yeah, if you want the short version, then, you know, spoiler alert, Bo Bichette was an awesome pick. And since then, it's been a bit rough. But I actually think that looking at the nuance of it is super interesting, reveals some things about the organization, how they work, and, you know, reinforces the importance of doing well this Sunday to restock this farm system, because they really need it. So yeah, the draft is a massive, massive organizational sort of opportunity, to use a word that Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins would. I'll try to stay away from those here. But it's a huge chance for this team to improve its chances of winning in the medium term and the long term. So you see the teams that draft well year after year, whether that's the Guardians, the Orioles, the Twins, the Diamondbacks have done really well. Those teams tend to be pretty good, even if they don't have big payrolls. Like the Guardians, the Orioles, those teams are bottom five in MLB, but they've done such a good job of drafting that they compete. You look at the teams that have done badly, they don't compete. The Rockies, they have negative war since 2017 out of the draft. Absolutely wild that that's the case, to me, that they have actually drafted players who have hurt their team. That is very telling about their organization. That's the other end of it. So the Blue Jays, they need to take advantage of these opportunities. And so I want to look at the ways that they have drafted and what that tells us about this organization. So let's go back to 2016. This is the first draft under, and don't worry, I'm not going to just go draft by draft. I've got some numbers here that essentially look at the totals compared to other teams. I want to be fair to the Blue Jays here. I don't want to go in here with, you know, preconceived assumptions. I want to actually let the numbers take me to a certain conclusion and see what that is. But in 2016, this was the first draft under Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, and it was by far their best, like not even close. It was an incredible draft. You look at the Blue Jays relative to other teams that year, and the Cardinals had an amazing draft that year. They took Tommy Edman. They took Zach Gallen. They would later trade Gallen. Still a great draft. The Dodgers, they took Will Smith, Tony Gonsolin, a bunch of others. Awesome draft for them. The Guardians ended up with Shane Bieber, Aaron Civale. Those were the three best drafts that year. The Blue Jays were fourth in all of baseball that year as far as drafted war from that draft class, 26.8. The vast majority of that comes from Bo Bichette. That's an incredible draft pick. You look at all players drafted since 2016, Bo Bichette is sixth in all of baseball. The only players with more WAR compared to Bo Bichette, Brian Reynolds, Pete Alonso, Zach Gallen, Will Smith, Bieber. That's it. It's hard to do better than drafting Bo Bichette.
Check swing bouncer, barehanded by Bichette. Nice play. And probably
he's obviously been a huge, huge part of what the Blue Jays have done on the field in recent years. So that pick was really good. They also got Kevin Biggio, sneaky pick in the fifth round.
You got to be better.
Kevin Biggio, line drive, deep right field, and it's gone.
That is the kind of draft that you really want to have if you're a major league organization. Good job by the Blue Jays, but here's, okay, it gets really interesting, to me at least, when you look at this draft. They also took TJ Zoik in the first round. That's a bust, but, you know, still a good draft. Now, this is where it gets interesting, because the scouting director at that time was Brian Parker. Brian Parker had been hired previously by Alex Anthopoulos. He had run some previous drafts for the Blue Jays, and he had drafted some good players. Jordan Romano, Danny Jansen, Kendall Graveman. He had made some good selections that helped the organization. Then they had that draft in June of 2016 where the Blue Jays chose Bo Bichette, Biggio. That's June. By August, Brian Parker was fired. So this was a big organizational turning point. Since then, 2017 onward, I'll get into the details later, but since then, it has not been as good. The results have not been as good. This was their best draft. It's a very awkward thing, right? You have this scouting director that objectively in the first year with Shapiro and Atkins does a really good job, or the results are really good, and then he's fired and the results aren't good since. So it's not a good look. At the same time, there's nuance to this, and I think it bears further exploration. So I think that it's worth getting into why that happened, and it's worth getting into what the Blue Jays were trying to accomplish with that dismissal. I also sort of want to get to the question of, before we move on from 2016, I want to get to the question of credit, which is a tough thing to do with drafts. But specifically with Bo Bichette, right, there can be a tendency, and I've heard these narratives out there, there can be a tendency to say that, like, all right, like the current Blue Jays front office, they fired the guy who drafted Bo Bichette, like obviously they should get no credit for it. Maybe it should even be Alex Anthopoulos who gets credit for Bo Bichette, because this is a player who was selected by the scouting director that Alex Anthopoulos had hired. I gotta say, that argument to me is not convincing. And I just want to be fair in this. There will be times later where, yeah, I'll have different comments and we'll see, but I just want to be fair in this. And I just don't think that that logic really holds up, because, okay, if we're doing that, if we're saying that Alex Anthopoulos gets credit, and obviously Alex Anthopoulos, great executive, incredible, incredible major league executive. This isn't by any means a shot at AA. But if we're going to give him credit for the Blue Jays draft that year, then Atkins and Shapiro, I guess, get credit for the Cleveland draft. And that draft was better than the Blue Jays draft because they got Shane Bieber and Svalley, and by WAR it's been better, but you just can't do that. I mean, Shapiro and Atkins were not there in Cleveland making those picks. Anthopoulos wasn't in Toronto making those picks. I just think you can't do it. You have to look at the people who were actually in place, what actually happened. You have the area scout, Matt Bischoff, identifies Bo Bichette. Great, great scouting by Matt Bischoff. Then you get to Brian Parker. He's on board. Good job by Brian Parker. Then you get to Ross Atkins. Ross Atkins is on board. Good job by Ross Atkins. Everyone in that situation, in that draft in 2016, it worked. Whatever happened, that result was a great result. So it got the Blue Jays a really good pick. So however you want to assign that credit between Bischoff, Brian Parker, Atkins, you know, you can divide that in different ways. But end of the day, they wanted the player. They got the player. And that was a transformative pick for the Blue Jays.
Bichette sends one to deep center. Gone! And it is their biggest inning of the season, and it all...
So, that's a good step for the organization. Okay, so then why are they firing this guy 2 months later? And this is, you know, I'm not saying I have this all figured out. I'm not saying that I've got every last detail on how this unfolded, but from that point onward in 2016 until now in 2024, I've definitely had conversations with various people in the Blue Jays organization about this process and even people outside of the organization and how it unfolded and why it unfolded. I have a reasonable idea of what occurred there. And again, I should say all of this, like this entire sort of take, this is all like my perspective. And I can tell you right now, some people will disagree with this and some people will see it differently. And because I've heard different perspectives on how the Blue Jays drafting history should be assessed. And people view these things in different ways. So what I'm sharing here is my thoughts. This is not the objective truth on the matter, but I'm trying to be as fair about it as possible. So again, why would they dismiss Brian Parker? My sense is it comes back to this Blue Jays word of process. And that's probably a word that doesn't do anyone any favors and probably a word that the Blue Jays front office officials should stop using because it's a little bit murky as far as what it means for fans. So I'll try to stop using it right here, but basically meaning how do you go about things? So how are things getting done? And my sense is that for the Blue Jays and Brian Parker, there wasn't alignment on how things got done. So Brian Parker had a way of doing things that clearly worked. I mean, to draft Jordan Romano, to draft Danny Jansen, Bo Bichette, the results were good. Those are good major league players.
Whoa, this is going to play as well. Long way to left, and it's gone. Danny Jansen up to the two spot today.
At the same time, Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins were the ones in charge at that point, and they had a different vision for things. They wanted to implement and create a system for the draft that would modernize things, that would bring in data from different sources, that would essentially evolve over time to become a tool as they added more data to it, as they used it and refined it over time, that would become a tool that would help the Blue Jays as they moved ahead as a franchise to draft in a way that was going to yield better results. And this tool would take time to build. It would push the organization probably further away from the subjective, hey, I really like this guy, to more of an objective model-based approach for the draft. And, you know, when you're talking about the draft, you're talking about hundreds, probably thousands actually of amateur players. There's a lot of information that's there. You've got to have a good system for kind of making sense of it. So that impulse, I think, makes sense. I think that wanting, again, this is my personal opinion here, I think that wanting to have a system in place for the draft, probably a good idea. Now, how do you go about implementing that? How do you go about working with the people who maybe have some skills in the organization to make sure that you're getting the most out of them, you're working on the human side, and you're also implementing this tool? There's a lot of nuance in that, and clearly not everyone saw eye to eye here. Brian Parker, the Blue Jays, I mean, I'm not telling tales out of school. They fired him less than 2 months after the draft. Clearly, the Blue Jays weren't really liking what they were seeing from Brian Parker and probably vice versa. I think that is a safe statement when you look at a dismissal that occurred so swiftly following the draft. There was not philosophical alignment here on how to do things. So this is a big shift. This is an inflection point for the organization at this point because now, Brian Parker's been dismissed. They did not align on how to do things. So now it's a question of, all right, how are you going to do things? You kind of have this blank slate now. What's going to happen? So have the changes now, because there have been seven drafts since 2016, have those changes worked? And the numbers would say that they're not working as well as intended. This is not a total disaster, but it's not working the way that you would hope for an organization with this many resources. And maybe that will change. We'll see. The Blue Jays, you know, again, to go back to that word, they focus a lot on the process. And I can understand why they would do that. But the results to this point have not been great. And I'll get further into those results in a second here. But first, I want to go back to 2016 and what happens at that point. So that summer, Brian Parker's out. All right, the Blue Jays hire Steve Sanders. And Steve Sanders becomes the scouting director who, again, is trying to work on two fronts here. You're looking at someone who's going to try to acquire and identify and sign the best amateur players available across the United States and Canada and Puerto Rico. That's a huge undertaking in and of itself. Then alongside that, you're trying to become more systematic as an organization. You're trying to make sure that things are kind of streamlined and modernized in a way that maybe they weren't in a different era. And to some extent, maybe this is like a difference between the front offices where, you know, under Paul Beeston, things were run a different way than they are under Mark Shapiro. That's pretty clear. To some extent also, it's just a product of the era, right? Like, I'm pretty sure that Alex Anthopoulos would have an advanced draft tool in Atlanta. There would be a system for that now because it's 2024 and basically every team is going to have that. Now, Anthopoulos might have a different way of doing things, almost certainly does have a different way of doing things than this current Blue Jays team. But across baseball, we've seen this push toward becoming more systematic, more data-driven, really at all levels of the game. And that includes the draft. So this is something that the Blue Jays essentially had to do. It's not necessarily like some big pushback against the previous front office. It's just something that had to be done. And so Shane Farrell was at first the person who was going to be in charge of that. And then later, Steve Sanders was hired by the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then the Blue Jays hired Shane Farrell, the son of John Farrell. And since 2020, it's been Shane Farrell who's been running the drafts. And these, both of these guys, like as far as what I've heard from people in the industry, like well-respected for the work that they put in and the skills that they have. And they certainly seem to be more aligned with Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins when it comes to what it means to think about this whole thing at a big, big picture level. Not just who do we like at number 21. All right, this is the lefty. I've seen him five times. He's got the good face, looks good in the uniform, whatever. But also what this means relative to other lefties who maybe also had a similar arsenal at a similar age and being able to plug that into your database and looking and having that information, because that's information the teams want. It's not publicly available. You have to build that out yourself. So, all right, in theory, this makes sense, right? Like in theory to me, this seems like a logical approach. You're going up against the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Orioles and the Guardians and teams like the Rays, Dodgers, Guardians. They lean heavily into these models. These models are really important to what they do. Doesn't mean that it's everything, but they're an important part of everything that they do. And take the Guardians, for example, it works. Take the Rays. It works. These teams have, generally speaking, good farm systems, good young players, talent that you can either trade or have on the major league roster. So those teams are doing this. And in theory, you want to not only compete with those teams, you want to do better than those teams. This is a tool that you can use and build. You probably want to go there. I think that the idea of doing that is actually a good idea. And I don't think it would be better if the Blue Jays in 2024 were sitting here without this tool and they were kind of just going ad hoc and I've never seen a high school shortstop with hands like that. Let's take him in the second round. You know, I think that really in this day and age, you want to have data that can help you back up your instincts, question them. I think that's a good thing. Now, have the Blue Jays successfully use this tool to get better results? Because end of the day, you can have this great infrastructure. Are you getting the results? And you probably know if you've made it this far into the podcast already. No, the results really haven't been good since 2016. And maybe that changes. You know, the draft results are an ever-evolving thing because one player pops up and all of a sudden you have a different perspective. But we can only go off the information we have right now. And the information that we have right now says that, hey, the Blue Jays might have a better process. They might have better tools, but it hasn't actually led to better picks on a consistent basis. And there is a connection to the Major League team and the current struggles of the Major League team when you look at the shortcomings from the draft. So we're going to step away just for a second here, but when I come back, I'm going to look more closely at those results, lay them out in a bit more detail here, and connect them to this current Blue Jays team. So we'll pick up that thread when we continue here on At the Letters. Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. All right, welcome back to At the Letters. Essentially, 2016, great draft. Bo Bichette, amazing pick. Since then, let's look. Let's look at these numbers. So I crunched these numbers here, went through every team, went through every draft. So there's a lot of different cells on the spreadsheet here, and this is where it leads. If you look at the drafted WAR since 2017, that's going to give you a sense of Major League production. Then I also want to look at the farm system rankings, because that will give us a sense of, hey, what's not being captured in the Major Leagues, what's actually just still percolating and building in the minor leagues. And if we look at those two categories, Major League production, minor league potential, that should give us an idea of how well a team is drafted. And again, it's going to be imperfect, so you just have to accept that. But this will give us an idea of how well the Blue Jays have done under Steve Sanders and Shane Farrell. And again, anytime we're talking about the Blue Jays, it's very much a collective approach. This is not a maverick draft process here. It's not one individual saying, I like this guy. It is very much an organizational approach. But those are the amateur scouting directors for that time period. It's going to go under their names. It's going to go under Ross Atkins. So that's, you know, to the extent that one person is responsible, these would be the people. Now, let's start with the Major League production. So since 2017, you've got the Diamondbacks, Guardians, Orioles, Mariners. These teams are crushing it in the draft since 2017. On the low end, like I said, Rockies, negative WAR. The Pirates also had negative WAR until recently. Then they draft Paul Skeens. Paul Skeens has had more WAR than all the Pirates combined since 2017. That's how bad they've been. Now, again, Steve Sanders, Ben Cherington, they've only been there more recently. That's probably going to shift as the Pirates, no doubt, build their own tool to systematize the draft. But so far, hasn't worked. Giants, A's, those teams have not done well in the draft over that time period. So the Blue Jays, they rank 21st. They have 11 WAR drafted in that period. Essentially, you're looking at Alek Manoah as the best pick by far during that period of time. And you're looking at a lot of misses. If you look at their first round picks during that period of time, you have Nate Pearson, Logan Warmoth, Jordan Groshans, Manoah, Austin Martin, Gunnar Hoglund, Brandon Barriera, and Arjun Namala. It's more misses than hits. It's not a great list. Namala looks really promising. He's off to a really good start in, I want to say, low A. But yeah, there are a lot of misses there. And that's not where you want to be. And then in theory, you can make up for that with later picks that really succeed. And the Jays do have some of those, like a Davis Schneider, who was a very late pick. But again, you look at the total WAR, and they are 21st in Major League Baseball for that period of time. Minor league potential. This is the other side. So in theory, if the Blue Jays had a relatively low WAR total, but their farm system was just absolutely bursting with prospects, then you say, okay, well, they just took some guys who are further away, and you know, this is going to change. This is going to impact the Major League team soon. And that is not something that we would say at this point, because you look at the publicly available farm system rankings and the Blue Jays rank, again, in the bottom third of farm system rankings, 23rd by Fangraphs, 24th by both Baseball America and MLB.com for the preseason rankings. Now, since those rankings were issued, things have shifted. I'm going to guess that the Blue Jays position hasn't improved when you look at Aurelvis Martinez dealing with the suspension, injuries for Tiedemann, Barriera, for Landon Marudas, those haven't moved things in the right direction, would be my guess. So now you're looking at, okay, the Major League team hasn't benefited as far as production on the field, and the minor league farm system isn't great. It's just not overflowing with prospects. So we can't really look at the results since that inflection point of 2017 and say that the results have been good. We can't really do that. The results have not been good. So has the process been better? Maybe. The results have not matched that, if that's the case. And look, you know, again, I've talked to various Blue Jays people about this over the years, both indirectly and directly about this topic. And one thing the Blue Jays people will say is, all right, well, sure, maybe the prospects haven't panned out, but we did turn Austin Martin into Jose Berríos. We did turn Gunnar Hoglund into Matt Chapman and Jordan Groshans into Zach Pop. And that's true. They did turn some of those draft picks into major league players. And that is a credit to the trades that they made. As long as we're talking about the actual draft, though, and of course, like, you know, there's a developmental aspect to it. There's a lot going on here, but as long as we're actually trying to assess the draft and how the Blue Jays do in the draft, I don't think that Austin Martin, Gunnar Hoglund, and Jordan Groshans are credits to how the Blue Jays have drafted, especially Austin Martin, 5 overall. That's the highest pick that they've had as an organization. They, you know, I'm not going to say tanked, but, you know, they were a bad team in 2019. They lost 95 games. 2020, you have a chance to add huge impact. Picking 5 is a big difference compared to picking 22, compared to picking 29. So that was a huge organizational opportunity that they probably didn't make the most of when it comes to choosing Austin Martin. And look, there are whiffs left and right across the draft. They are not alone in this. The teams take swings and miss all the time. It's the nature of the draft. But I'm not trying to look at one pick and say, you know, how could they have chosen Austin Martin? I'm trying to look at the bigger picture and see what emerges. And to me, what emerges is you're not seeing enough value from the draft, because this is again, a huge, huge opportunity as an organization to either augment the major league team or develop guys that you're going to eventually use in trades. And they have used the guys in trades, but they haven't augmented the major league team enough. And I think this especially applies to pitching. So you look at pitching for the Blue Jays and who they have drafted. Alek Manoah, that's a good pick.
A changeup on 3-2, and Torkelson swings through it.
Fooled me too.
You get a guy who finishes as a top 3 Cy Young finalist. We'll see what the future holds for Manoah, but already we can say that's a good pick. And I know some people might be bristling at, what? Alek Manoah is a good pick? But honestly, like, look back at what you expect. Look back at how many busts there are in the draft. Like, if you get even a couple of seasons from a player who is in your starting rotation, who is a regular in your starting lineup, it's a good pick. It just is, because there is so much attrition. There's so many bad picks in the draft because you're picking, you know, teenagers, right? Like, you're, in some cases, like Namala, like, he's 17. It's like, how are you going to project what this individual is going to look like at 22, 23? It is incredibly tough. There's a lot of science involved. There's art and science and, you know, character assessment, all these different things. So all that to say, Manoah is a good pick. Does that mean that he hasn't missed some opportunities and he couldn't have done better and become an even better pick? That's a discussion for another day. But relative to other draft picks, there is value there. Then you look beyond Manoah. In that 8-year period, the Blue Jays have one other pitcher that they've drafted who has at least 2 career WAR. And that is Josh Winkowski, who was traded to the Mets in the Steven Matz trade. And he was a 15th round pick in 2016, that very first draft under Brian Parker. So Josh Winkowski, cool. You traded him. You got Steven Matz. He has like 2.1 WAR last I checked. So we're not talking about someone who's been a super impactful player. But those are the two pitchers that you have, who you've drafted in 8 years, that have 2+ WAR. And it's just not enough. And especially when you compare it and kind of combine it with their international results, especially on the pitching side, right? Internationally, they've added Kirk and Moreno and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and before that, Vlad Jr. They've had impactful position player additions internationally, which is to say from Venezuela, from the Dominican. They just haven't found pitchers from Latin America. They have not done it. And that has cost them as well. So you have no international pitching additions of consequence and only Manoa essentially impacting your pitching depth. And this is where you get to a point that the Blue Jays never wanted to be at, where they do not have enough organizational pitching depth. And I go back to 2015, right after Mark Shapiro took over, that first winter meetings, he was looking at the Blue Jays roster from that previous season under Anthopoulos, and he said that the AAA roster had guys named blank. And he said, guys named blank don't contribute a lot. And it was clear, listening to him at that time, that he wanted the Blue Jays to be a developmental organization that would not be in a position where you had guys named blank who were not able to backfill and contribute and offer the depth that a major league team needs to contend over the course of 6 months. But here we are, 2023, 2024, Trevor Richards is starting. It's a four-man rotation. You're looking at Paulo Espino or Wes Parsons or just trying to find ways to backfill with bullpen games a contending team or a team that was supposed to contend. So this is not where the Blue Jays wanted to be. And I think this is where, you know, the lack of results in the draft hurts the most, because on the position player side, they are better positioned with guys like a Spencer Horwitz or a David Schneider who may become, you know, valuable position players.
Hedges hits it hard to left field. Dive by Schneider. What a catch. David Schneider takes one away from Austin.
But on the pitching side, and this isn't just the starting rotation, it's also the bullpen, but the results have not been good enough to really support the major league team. And this is really important because the Jays, they have done a good job of signing free agent starting pitching. There's no question about that. When you look at Gausman, Bassett, Kikuchi, potentially Ariel Rodriguez, they've found pitchers to help them in free agency. But I think anyone would say this, you need to also have that pipeline of talent coming from the minor leagues. And when you look at the last 8 years, there has not been enough pitching drafted. There just hasn't, you know, two players to generate two WAR in all that time with all the pitchers drafted, all the resources that go into it, the money that goes into it, the infrastructure, that's supposed to yield results. And in those last 7 years, there have been some ups and downs. There have been some turbulence. You talk to people about the transition, and maybe there's a frictional cost there that happens as the Blue Jays were undergoing this transition. But, you know, in theory, they should be at a spot now where they have a better process and they have a system that works better for them. And that may well be the case. And again, I think that was a good decision to try to do that. How they went about that, I don't know. I wasn't there behind the scenes. I'm not gonna speculate. But what we can say is we can look at the results. We can say that the Blue Jays have not drafted well enough in the last 7 years as far as the results on the major league field, as far as the results in the minor league system, and specifically as far as pitching. And it's connected to the major league team. It matters to the health of the organization. So, you know, I mean, that's pretty much where I'm at. I hope that you found that interesting to listen to. I certainly found it interesting to look at these results and to talk to some people about why this is the way it is. Short version, I think Bo Bichette was a great pick, and that went well, and that's a credit to the organization. And since then, there just haven't been enough good picks. There have not been enough good results. Whatever that process is, the results have not been good enough. The results are bottom third in Major League Baseball over that period of time. And so on Sunday, this draft is a big one. Every draft is a big one. I'll be fascinated to see who they take. And I think safe to say that they definitely need better results as quickly as possible because the farm system needs it. The organization needs it. So I will leave it there. That is going to be it. Hopefully that's not too much of a downer episode. I wish I had better news. But that's it for this week. We'll talk to you sometime soon on At the Letters. Thanks to everyone so much for sticking with us through the first half of this season. Pretty rough first half of the season. So anyone who's made it this far into the year with us, this far into the episode, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate the interest and the support, and we will continue to bring you more episodes throughout the second half, so stick with us. Thanks to Christian Ryan for producing. Thanks as well to Nick Andrade, and we will talk to you soon on At the Letters.